Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm Laura Dierda, an editor at Becker's Healthcare, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Steve Rentling, Chief Technology and Innovation Officer at Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society, or HIMSS. Steve has more than two decades of technology and executive experience and now leads the innovation and digital technology efforts for HIMSS, which is a global enterprise. It's a fascinating time for health IT, and I'm excited to have Steve here today. Steve, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me today. Before HIMSS, spent about 15 years in operational healthcare, and before that, about 5 years in telecom and consulting. And I have a background, kind of grew up as a software engineer and as a solution developer. And over time, I grew in responsibility and had a real passion for architecture, IT architecture, and innovation, and really thinking beyond what really solving the problem in front of us was. So I got a great opportunity to spend about 10 years at Kaiser Permanente, kind of helping them transform their space into much more of a digital experience, working on things like telehealth, their mobile strategy, and running the clinical data warehouse. Really learned a lot there, and then spent about 5 years at DaVita as the global chief technology officer there, and also the CIO for the integrated care management division. So it's been a fun journey so far.
That's fantastic. And we're so excited to have your expertise here. I know you've had many different experiences, so we're excited to have that. I want to begin our discussion today with interoperability. What is your impression of how interoperable healthcare organizations are today, and where do you see things about 12 months from now?
Sure. Well, I mean, in a little bit of reflection, if you think about the last decade, healthcare organizations have really come a long way with interoperability. We've had that really that transition in the last decade of deploying EHRs, and which, you know, to now have been able to exchange clinical data on a pretty broad basis. But in terms of interoperability, being able to innovate on top of his existing assets, there's still a ways to go. And I guess the way I think about it is, I think Todd Park started off with kind of coined the free the data phrase, at least in healthcare circles. And I think now we're starting to move from freeing the data, accessing the data, to enabling the data, which interoperability is key to. And, you know, what's helpful is that the Cures Act has created opportunities in the U.S. to enable more innovation around the existing systems that benefit the patients. And, and also because of it, allow integration into cloud systems and with other providers of solutions and functions that are available, you know, in other solution spaces. So I do think, you know, the next 12 months will be interesting. We all know that there's this COVID push that has really opened up innovation out of necessity, but also now moving from necessity to why haven't we been doing some of this before? and there's really a strong enablement along with the rules from the U.S. perspective. Now, at the same time, you know, hospital and health systems are reeling from the financial impact of COVID-19. And there are some predictions out there, kind of as a whole, that hundreds of millions of dollars are going to be coming in or already in losses for hospitals and different types of health systems and providers. So I do think there may be some advantages on innovation using interoperability from a payer perspective, using those APIs where they may have a little bit more powder, so to speak, to be able to kind of help fill those gaps. In the meantime, well, there will be some targeted areas within the hospital and health system that have the means to still innovate on top while meeting the regulatory rules. So, you know, overall, I do think we have made great leaps and bounds with interoperability, and yet, as always, we could do more. And I think that's actually really a good thing.
Absolutely. That makes a lot of sense for hospitals and health systems especially. Now, how should industry think about interoperability? What can it do and what can't it do?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting space to think about. You know, sometimes I think overall the industry looks at interoperability or has looked at it as a magic bullet. you know, but there's a lot of components to having a mature understanding of what you need to not just exchange data, but support really more of a shared process and focus on what you're trying to achieve with accessing and using the different types of data and functions that you need to be able to give the right data at the right time to physicians or patients or those that are involved in the care process. So, you know, I think the broader health industry should think about interoperability as an opportunity to provide more value at a faster pace into the care process and to those involved in providing care and receiving care. And, you know, that, like I mentioned before, there's been a lot of adoption of EHRs, and we've got, you know, almost nearly full penetration across at least the U.S. setting, across provider practices and health systems. So, you know, now that we've achieved that, we're seeing innovation, but we also need to think about how we can take advantage of that data, how we can move into that enable phase of interoperability with automating workflows, being able to add intelligence into, you know, taking that data and then doing something with it, and then putting those applications into the hands of decision makers. And of course, decision makers can change now as we, you know, have more accessibility to data, allowing patients and their caregivers to have transparency and more access to make decisions, you know, being more part of the process with access to that data. And the promise of interoperability it can really do is to take advantage of the foundation we have and then accelerate that innovation.
That's a great point. Thank you for going through that with us. Now, what has been the value of interoperability during the pandemic?
Well, there's been a lot of value. I think, you know, I had mentioned there, I think overall stepping back, no matter who you are and what industry you're in, but I'm, I think particularly healthcare, you know, there's been some questions that have been brought up. You know, why haven't we been able to move as quickly to make adjustments or innovate on the fly or make decisions like we have done during COVID versus before? And I think, you know, it's driven the access to data is that driver for being able to innovate during COVID and what you do with that data. So, you know, the ability for health systems to get access to that data, integrate it into other systems, pull the data out to look at what are the, you know, what's the reports for patient capacity within an ICU? What are the amount of resources that are available? And of course, if that supply chain information wasn't available, we know that was, you know, particularly difficult and, you know, had to be assembled on the fly and then kind of managed outside of what the standard process might have been. So I think there's also an aspect of, from a patient care perspective, in being able to care for patients, you know, when they're being transferred from maybe one setting to another, or maybe have never gone to a hospital before, but have care through a different health system, and be able to access the records of the patient to see, you know, what their health history is and the medications they're on if they can't really speak for themselves, or all of the important information that, you know, would put a physician and their care team in the right position to start, you know, recommending the right treatment and care plan. You know, and I think that obviously interoperability gives us in each health system access to the right information to form that baseline to understand the patient's history to provide, you know, a better context for care. You know, organizations that have already embraced interoperability, they benefit from understanding, you know, the conditions the patient may already have or come with, or things that may have been tried before. And, you know, if it's prescriptions that they're already on, what possible interactions or changes need to be made to kind of to take care of what the really acute issue is, in this case, you know, focus on COVID-19 to make sure that they're not introducing new medications into a patient that may actually cause them more harm than what the condition they are, you know, dealing with at the moment. you know, for health systems where interoperability hasn't been paramount, the pandemic has shown how valuable it can be. So, you know, a good example would be Providence up in Washington State. You know, they dealt with one of the first, some of the first cases in the first wave of the pandemic. And, you know, they face challenges that all health systems are facing now, but were early on with, you know, filling up capacity, being able to manage patients. And so, you know, they deployed devices to patients that they suspected or knew had COVID to be able to monitor their temperature, their oxygen, their blood pressure in their home. And they were able to then gather that data through interoperability with the devices back into their systems to alert, you know, when the patient might need a checkup, a check-in, a virtual visit that's not part of the normal course of that, and or when to direct them to come into the emergency department or room, this type of interaction, ability to access that data, transfer it, make decisions on it, was able to give patients comfort, right? That their physician knew what was going on, that it was okay to be at home, that they didn't have to panic. And also the physician's ability to take that information and make the right type of decision for the patient, you know, not put them into a setting where maybe they didn't need higher acute care or in some cases direct them immediately to come in and make sure they, you know, were given the type of care in the hospital that they needed, given their symptoms and where they were. So, you know, without this type of interoperability, which we often don't think about, we think a lot about the devices and things like that, but underlying it is, you know, you would have to have the patient at home documenting things. You would have a gap of knowing really what's going on with the patient and, or, you know, maybe more constant reach outs that don't meet, you know, when patients are needing, you know, that connection or to be able to talk to someone and match up the medical professional for them. So, you know, I think within our ability, it's instantaneous or can be, but it gives you the right data at just the right time. And it was given, you know, those physicians and that care team in Washington the ability to make decisions with data. And it really, I think, is a great example of how interoperability has been helpful.
Got it. There's definitely a lot of value there, it seems like. What role do you see interoperability playing in the COVID-19 vaccine distribution in the future?
Well, you know, interoperability is definitely front and center as an enabler to distributing the vaccine. It's you know, the scale of deploying a COVID-19 vaccine, it's global in nature, it's unprecedented, and it's, you know, maybe more important than ever to be able to track the information about the vaccine distribution in a more out of way than ever before. And then the more that it can be standardized, the better off the patients will be, the health systems will be, and those that are serving public health will be. You know, it's not clear yet what the COVID-19 vaccine protocol is going to look like. It may be early on, or at least the first dose someone takes could be two doses. And as we've seen with other vaccines, if there's routine follow-up maybe needed on an annual basis. So there's going to need to be that type of tracking that's needed, which gets tied into also then reporting, right? And understanding when a patient shows up in their health system or another setting, a hospital, have they had a dose or both doses? You don't give them an extra dose if they've already had it. Maybe sometimes people forget and don't remember. So being able to access that data, make sure it's included in the care process, as well as being able to report out your panel, your population of patients as a physician, as a health system, as a hospital, is going to be very important from a public health perspective as well. You know, I think also interoperability can and hopefully will play a role in the conditions of how the vaccine is stored and transported, and understanding if those vaccines were handled properly so that they are effective when they're given. And so if not, right, there's going to be some misunderstanding or possible gap in knowing whether how effective those are. Also, the opportunity to quickly gather data and report if there are adverse reactions to a certain batch of vaccine or by a certain maker, even though it's gone through all the trials and conditions, being able to record that data, but then share that data, report that data, to the state, federal, and other type of health authorities is going to be important. I think the other thing that's really important around getting access to the data about the distribution is knowing if there's enough of a population getting or not getting the vaccine that could compromise herd immunity in certain local areas. You know, that's going to be critical for public health decisions about understanding how the distribution is going, knowing where maybe there's different types of targeted education opportunities are going to be needed for individuals who may or may not understand how to access the vaccine or have fear of the vaccine in those type of scenarios as well. So, and that may be some of the key cases, and there's a lot of probably other things that are going to need to be done. But obviously underlying that is the role of interoperability and enabling that.
That's great insight, and so interesting to think about how the next few months will play out. From your perspective, what investments do hospitals or health systems need to make to ensure they're ready for the future, especially when thinking about interoperability and the potential there?
Yeah, it's, I think it's really important to start at the beginning with good fundamentals and the foundation of what you need. So making sure that they have a good approach to their data, they're managing their data to ensure that they know how to access it, that it's quality, that there's a governance process around it to manage all of that, including the access to the data, the privacy of the data. It's easy to kind of focus on apps and APIs and buzzwords, but making sure that data infrastructure is there, is managed well, is available to use from the basics of reporting to analytics to then accessing the information through APIs and then enabling that for workflows and other functions is really critical and often gets overlooked and as people talk about kind of things further up in the stack like apps and APIs. So I think the other thing that's important is applying guidelines for purchasing and procuring solutions, whether it's hardware or software, et cetera, but definitely in, when you think about it from a software side, supporting, health IT standards and procurement process and your purchasing guidelines. So, building things in like support for HL7 Fire and the versions as an example of Fire 4 will be important because as you integrate your systems and add new software, new solutions, not worrying about that, adding complexity to how they would integrate or whether you'd be able to share that data easily between systems or in a shared process should be handled up front and not on the back end. And it makes it easier just to kind of plug and play your solutions, although that's could be a loaded term, but more quickly within a health system, and when connecting to outside parties and payers as well. And then something else that's important is an API gateway and an API registry to know what keep track of the interfaces and that your systems provide and the gateway to access them and integrate those APIs with other systems internally as well as externally and you'd be able to even track usage to know where you need to apply additional maybe resources for capacity. And this also enables systems to move fast to connect to and integrate with other cloud providers and other providers of solutions through APIs and new and up and coming really functions as a service to allow them to take advantage of innovation from the outside, as well as, you know, internally within their system.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. And now, before we wrap up here, I have one more question. What expectations do you have for the federal government related to interoperability? How do you think the final rule will be enforced, and will there be any other changes or mandates that you see in the future?
Yeah, you know, the federal government's really made a lot of investments over the years in interoperability from a number of angles. And one thing that I expect to continue is this continuity between the national coordinators for IT around driving access and enablement of data. You can kind of see that continuity in thinking and process between Dr. Braylor, Dr. Mustashari, and Dr. Rucker. You know, and I think I expect that to continue. Dr. Rucker has picked up the mantle from the previous coordinators and really continue to drive for the final rule that was actually published, which was pretty monumental. And I do expect that legacy to continue, whether Dr. Rucker continues for many years or his successor comes in. I think they're going to be driving to understand what the American people need, how to open up access for better care and lower costs and enable new innovation through APIs. As it relates to enforcement, there are definitely specific penalties for noncompliance, and the U.S. government has been intentional in bringing stakeholders together to make sure the rule is understood, to get feedback, and to facilitate the uptake of the rules, and also to create tools to help with the adherence. So, along with HIMSS, put together an initiative around being able to measure APIs, get a baseline understanding of usage, and then turn that into what's the value and kind of build on that. And they've also introduced a tool to help facilitate that called Lantern. So, I think while enforcement is going to happen, I think they're more focused on enabling the rule versus enforcement. But I think based on the seriousness of how they rolled out the rule and the approach with the stakeholders, investing in the tools, it means everyone should plan for enforcement because, they've taken a lot of the roadblocks out of the way. And it's really positive the way they've taken action to support all the parties in adhering to the rule. Regarding any kind of future mandates or changes, I think, again, they're going to build on wrapping what they do around enabling the core tenets of the Cures Act. There's definitely, probably going to be more fine-tuning. They're going to use the analysis on API measurement and benchmarking to give them insights on, what incentives maybe to lay out or what gaps are there to, make changes or future mandates. But I do think where they're going to focus more on is because they've opened the door on access more towards enablement.
Got it. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure to speak with you, and I look forward to continuing our conversation in the future.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.